You're listening to Errol Parker and Clancy Overall, editors of the Batuta Advocate on Desert Rock FM.
Well, welcome back to the Batuta Advocate radio show, live from quarantine. You're joined by myself, Clancy Overall, editor of the Batuta Advocate, and of course, Errol Parker, editor at large, sitting next to me. How are you, Errol?
Always good, mate. Always good to get back in the booth with you, the only person in Batuta who apparently doesn't have coronavirus right now.
Yeah, you know, Batuta Grove is a popular kind of place for a lot of people who enjoy going on cruises, so that's actually come as a great detriment to our community, but you know, we're getting past it. Only a few active cases left and they're all in quarantine. Another bloke that's in quarantine, another proud Queenslander currently based in Brisbane, is today's guest, Jesse the Monster Williams. How are you, Bala?
How's it going? Feeling pretty good.
Yeah, we're doing all right. You're based back in Brisbane. You've lived all around the States, been around the world. You're currently based in Brisbane, and you're running gyms and consulting, right?
Yeah, well, I do a bunch. Yeah, I'm here for a little bit. I'm sort of just chilling. Obviously, quarantine did a good job of stopping all travel for me, which was a disappointing. Yeah. But I do a bunch, man. I do a lot of consulting around. I was doing a lot of coaching and stuff, sort of. Stopped doing a lot of that. Lucky enough, good timing before the quarantine stuff started, which was good. Sort of moved towards some other passions of mine. Obviously, I do a lot of photography, and I've done that for many years. So I started doing a bit more of that, and it's caught wind with a few people and the areas that I've been lucky enough to work in throughout Australia and the US. So I'm sort of pushing that a bit more at the moment. And you know, if it's one thing I think quarantine has done, it's given me a lot of time to focus on things I really want to do. Yep. And I guess using that energy and putting it into the things that I think I'm most passionate about. And, you know, if quarantine was going to stay like this for a long period of time, I guess trying to find things that make me happy instead of things that keep me busy.
Now, do you reckon you are the first Thursday Island boy to go to Alabama?
Yeah, I definitely think I would be. I think before I went, I don't know many people from Thursday Island or Indigenous people. Most Australians really knew anything about Alabama besides the movie with Reese Witherspoon or Forrest Gump, which are great representations, especially Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely think I'd be up there, at least top three.
You spent a lot of time in the States. I mean, obviously, you know, you ended up making your way to the NFL, you know, played college football there in Alabama. We'll get into how you got into all that a bit later in the interview, but like, you obviously spent so much time there that from such a young age that it kind of affected your accent. How was the culture kind of clash arriving there? I mean, you spent most of your life in Brisbane, Cannon Hill boy.
Yeah, it was tough at the start. Like, I'm Indigenous boy, born and raised in Brisbane. You know, I've been through those whole circles. Like, I lived on the south side of Brisbane my whole life. I think going straight over there at the 17, 18, and I was there probably 10, almost 11 years straight. I would come back sparingly, maybe weeks at a time, and I was in places where accent, I guess communication barriers had to be jumped somehow. From Arizona to Alabama to Seattle, especially like in the south, communicating, if anyone's ever been to the south, understanding some of the people down there is pretty tough, as well as them trying to understand me, let alone, you know, be on the football field and I have to yell things out, and then I got a bunch of dudes looking at me like, well, I'm speaking Spanish. So yeah, they definitely, you know, people always say that. I think that's the first thing they say, like, oh, you got an accent. I was like, yeah, I mean, if you sort of lived anywhere for like 10 years, you sort of like have to. I think if you moved to like Toowoomba or something, you'd pick up some sort of accent as well.
If you were there
10 years, you know. Mine's not too bad. It depends, I think, how heated I get.
Yeah.
Like when I go and speak around and do stuff, I think I get pretty in the moment. I'm sort of having like Vietnam flashbacks for football.
Alabama flashbacks.
I'm pretty into it and stuff. So I think it comes out a bit stronger then. But most of the time, it's pretty relaxed, I think. I've traveled so many places, I couldn't pinpoint what the hell I sound like most of the time. I really don't think my accent's changed at all until I get on the flight from LA back to Australia and I hear the stewardess or something like that, and I'm just like, whoa, you sound like you're out of a movie from Australia, and I don't like it. Super strong, but most of the time, I don't really pick it up.
Can you go back to the start? I'm really interested to hear what the pathway is from, you know, playing a bit of park rugby in Capalaba to ending up playing American football. Like, how did that transition start? Did you have a passing interest in it growing up, or?
Honestly, no. The only thing I ever saw was, like, you know, like every other Australian would be like,
remember the Titans?
Friday Night Lights, yeah. Remember the Titans, and I'm like, oh, this is wild. Basketball's my main sport. I played that my whole life. My whole family plays that. And I had a few friends that were playing basketball with me that went to school with Cavern in Brisbane. And obviously they noticed my girlish figure growing throughout high school. And they were like, hey, you got to come down and play football. And I was like, play gridiron. I was like, oh. I was like, my mom doesn't even want me to play rugby league. I don't know if she's going to let me, let alone have the money, but and then let me play gridiron. You know,
buy all the gear,
Yeah,
I'm like, I'm watching the movies, like, at the time, I was like, on dial-up internet watching the Dallas Cowboys defense, and I was like, man, I don't know if this is for me, but I went down there. I was like, all right, I get to, you know, go hit people, not get in trouble. I was like, this sounds like right up my alley. So I go down there and started playing a little bit, fell in love with it, purely just from, like, the aggression side and my skill set match. And I was a big kid. Like, I was this size when I was, like, 16, but I could run. And I was getting too tired trying to run, playing basketball, being, you know, 130, 135 at the age of 16. I was like, man, my shins are not taking the hard court no more. I was like, oh, I'll play football. It actually picked up quite rapidly. I was lucky enough to play the first year. I played really well. Obviously, I was just playing against little kids, essentially. And I was just crushing kids. Yeah. You know, breaking arms. I was knocking kids out, a bunch of different things. And then I actually got the opportunity to play for Queensland, which was huge. And a few college scouts saw me there. And then I played for Australia against New Zealand down the 8 AIS.
That would have been tough. That again.
Yeah.
That would have been tough with the Samoan influence as well.
Yeah,
in
they were big, man. Yeah. Like, the quarterback for New Zealand was like the same size as me.
Yeah.
So I was like, this can't be good. And I on our Aussie team, it wasn't a lot of size. There might have been like three or four of us that were like over like 115 kilos. You know, I went out there and I balled out. I had some stupid stats. I was like playing with a 99 character on Madden.
Yeah.
I was like blocking every kick. I was like doing everything. So one of the guys from Arizona Western College, Jerry Dominguez, defensive coordinator, he came out and was like a guest coach of this camp for Australia. Low key, I think they were just looking for punters.
Yeah.
As most American teams do. And then they just stumbled upon me and they were like, who's this kid? Like, I was already, you know, covered in tattoos. I was like 17. I was like super aggressive, had like super like thick mohawk. I honestly looked like I didn't give any fucks about anything. So I was like playing middle linebacker. And he sort of gave me the heads up that, you know, I'm doing pretty well. I have the body shape. Obviously, I'm playing well enough. He thinks I could have an impact in the U.S. And at this point in time, I was like, yeah, it's sort of like not a fairy tale, but it's like unknown. Like,
yeah.
At this time, 10 or so years ago, 11 years ago, if someone said, oh, you can try and make it to the NFL, like, and much of the reports that we got back as well when I started saying that, it was like, this is crazy. This is impossible. No one has done this ever. So it was just like, all right, well, I'll you know, play with the idea a little bit. And I remember I went back to my family, who obviously know nothing about anything to do with football, about America, anything. You know, I'm going to try and go to this school and see what I can do, and then, you know, maybe try and go play in the NFL. What a lot of people don't know is that junior college, Arizona Western, they actually didn't give me a scholarship to go over. Right. I actually had to work three jobs and with my parents to pay for the first semester, which was like $9,000 US or something for the,
that's a lot of Benjamins,
for the spring and the fall.
Yeah.
And we actually decided, and we've got enough money together, we paid for it. And then I had like $275, a duffel bag. And then I had Jerry Dominguez and his phone number written in my passport, and then I left.
Wow.
My family had no clue. Never been anywhere. I didn't go with anyone.
You went overseas with $275.
3 years later, yeah. So I just left. You know, I look back at it now and I was like, yo, that was wild. But, you know, I remember getting to the airport in LA and I was like, this is a movie. Like, I don't even know. I couldn't tell you where Arizona geographically was on the map, and I'm supposed to get there. And so I get on this, and Yuma, Arizona is like the butthole of America. It's like the worst place. It's like so hot. It's just nothing but like a lot of farming. This one tiny school. It's like nothing. It's like one mall.
Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Man, super close. And then I was just like, I get on this tiny plane, like I'm flying on Thursday, oh, and this like 8-seater, and I'm like, oh, I'm about to die trying to fly to this desert. I get to the airport in Yuma, look in the passport, call Jerry, picks me up, man. It's like 123 degrees Fahrenheit. I was dying. I was wearing like a jacket, and I was like, all right, it takes me to the dorms, and then everything sort of started from there. And I wasn't on scholarships. I had, you know, stuff all money. I was pretty much eating, you know, ramen noodles and fresh air for about a year. And they said if I played well, if I showed the opportunities or the headroom that I could get better, then they'll put me on scholarship. So, man, I put everything to it. You know, a lot of the guys there are guys that are from Division One that got kicked out, guys that are trying to make it to Division One. It's like, I try and tell people, it's like the longest yard.
Yeah.
We're not in prison, though, even though it feels like it, but everyone's just trying to get out. And the harder you work, the more opportunity you can get out. So I couldn't play with a lot of those guys, man. I got there, you know, 6'8". Black dudes, you know, with a beard and like four kids that play the same position. Like everyone is big and strong and fast, and everyone's played football, you know, their whole lives. So, you know, I sort of drew a line in the sand and was like, man, I'm just going to, this is my only shot. This is like a do or die, you know. And if you met me back then, I would definitely die for that idea. I think that's why it was so powerful. I sort of just outworked everybody. If it was school, if it was, you know, running, if it was lifting, if it was drinking water, I was going to beat every single person. And I did. I did everything. I, you know, I broke all the conditioning records. I lived in the weight room. I did nothing but, you know, go to school and work out. I guess it's the benefits of living in a real tiny town.
Yeah.
And then I played that whole year, and I actually, I bowled out, started every game. You know, we won a conference. And by the end of the year, once everyone got ranked, in regards to like being able to get recruited to go to Division One, I was the number one player in the whole country.
Yeah, right.
So as you can imagine, they put me on scholarship.
Yeah.
This tiny university. So
I actually started getting money then, not money as in like actual money, but they started putting money towards my schooling and like dorm rooms and all that sort of stuff like that. So I was a little bit more relaxed. And then I played another year. And at the end of that, I was the number one player in the country still. And as you get, I was getting recruited by everybody. You know, the late Joe Paterno would fly out, talk to me on the phone from Penn State. Coach Saban came out multiple times, which is, like, you know, it's a cross-country flight just to see me. You know, they would stay for a few hours and then leave. You know, I think I had over 50-something offers. I pretty much could have went anywhere in the country.
How do you navigate that as, like, you know, a kid who 1 year earlier didn't really know shit about America? How did you make...
Like, no, my parents knew nothing, you know? Like, I was trying to... I would Skype them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And...
Hey, Mom, the most famous college coach in the world just flew down to Arizona West today to have a chat. Like, how...
Man, well, you know, it's funny. I actually... I walked right by Nick Saban in the cafeteria. I didn't know who it was. I walked straight by him. And everyone was like, oh, my God, it's Nick Saban. I was like, who the hell is that? I'm, like, looking around. I'm like, what does he look like? I'm looking at Nick Saban thinking I'm about to see, like, someone with security or, like, someone looking, you know, super swole, looking like, a real solid dude. It was just this real short white guy wearing a suit just with, like, this real strong boy. And I was like, oh, it must be him. And, I met all the Kiffins, you know, the Ed Orgerons. I met the Kirby Smarts, everyone there. Everyone flew out to sort of see me. And it was crazy at the time. I knew nothing. You know, Joe Paterno called me on the phone, and he was one of the most famous football coaches in the world, coach of Penn State, who passed away. And I got off the phone and I talked to my roommate, and he was like, who's that? I was like, Joe Paterno. I was like, do you know who that is? And he lost his mind. I was like, why? Who is it? I was like, oh, it was a guy from Penn State. I was like, oh, that's weird. And yeah, it's pretty crazy. But my roommate at the time, Andrew Power, he was from South Carolina. Big white boy from Myrtle Beach, and he played a huge role in that for me. We actually, you know, I remember my dorm room was just full of boxes, just letters, it was just handwritten letters from all these coaches, schools, flyers, you know, superimposed photos of me with jerseys on and like pictures of stadiums with me running around, and like it was outrageous. Like it was just so much dead trees in my dorm room from schools. I was
in
like,
the middle of Arizona,
too much for me to talk through. So I go to Walmart and I buy this big whiteboard and I sit down with Andrew, my roommate, and I just say, hey, let's, every time someone calls or we get a letter, we just write the offer now. And by the end, I had two whiteboards. I had to, you know, re-up on another whiteboard, and I start going through it, and, you know, we're going through everything, you know, defenses, current coaches, like how many spots they got, like how many veteran in my position would they have, and, you know, Alabama was actually one of the early ones, which was surprising. I think once Alabama sort of offered me, it was just like floodgates. Yeah. It was like, oh man, if Alabama needs this D tackle, he must be the man. So everyone just sort of flooded it. And towards the end of the junior college career, I started taking some trips around. I actually took a trip September 3rd against San Jose State to Alabama. I went down there for my official recruiting trip, and honestly, it blew my mind. Coming from a junior college where I was pretty much starving most of the time and, like, you know, walking to Walmart to get stuff. And
Walking.
Man, some pretty hood stuff.
In the Arizona heat.
But, you know, it was a lot different. I went to Alabama and, you know, I love country stuff. I love small town sort of feel. I'm not a real big city guy. First game of the season, see 110,000 people in the stadium and then like another 150 to 200 outside just tailgating. You know, I was the number one recruit in the country, so I was somewhat known, but I didn't think I was really known. I never really sort of bought into myself too much. And even just walking around, man, people would scream at me in the stands. People had Australian flags because they knew that I was going to be in town that week.
Really?
People were screaming everything. I was like, man, this is unbelievable. This is ridiculous. Every single person I met knew who I was right away. The whole weekend, I was like, this is wild. And I was like, obviously, it was a lot of like real pretty Southern girls. Everyone's super nice. I saw the hospitality. I was like, this is amazing. And then, you know, I went and saw the facilities, met with all like teachers and strength coaches, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, I fell in love with the place. It was a decision. It was sort of a split decision for me. It was like when I was taking these trips and sort of choosing where to go, it was like, do I go to a small school and like be the man, like a UCLA or like Hawaii or something? Do I go there and be like the absolute star?
Yeah.
And or do I go to like a big school like Alabama, Miami, LSU, and earn every second that I get the opportunity to play? If someone's going to write a book or do a movie about it, I was like, it'd be super lame if I chose the easy route. So the whole time I was in the US, I just chased that adversity. And I was like, yeah, this has to be it. There has to be some sort of sunshine at the other side of this. So, and I loved it. I loved Alabama. And they just lost the year before. And I knew Nick Saban wasn't going to lose 2 years in a row. So I was like, this is a good personal bet to myself to be a part of something that's going to go the whole way. And then, yeah, I committed. I spoke to Coach Saban at the end of that trip. And I said, man, I said, you don't have to say nothing. And I just said, you know, he just said he'll look after me, he'll make sure everything's taken care of, and he'll do his best part in developing me into a good man and a good football player. And I was like, that's enough for me. That's... So yeah, I was like, I'll commit right here.
So I mean, what you just said then, 110,000 people at your first game, 200,000 outside, that amount of people in itself is more than you'd get at every AFL and NRL match in one round. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like both codes, every stadium.
That's so many people.
One weekend in winter. How does it feel to sign something like that and money not be involved? You know what I mean? Like, that's the college thing that puzzles a lot of people, particularly in Australia. It's like you're entertaining. You are basically a mercenary in this scenario. Did they give you a car? Do you get anything? Like, do you get food stamps?
So the way it works, and everyone always says that, you know, they're like, oh man, surely you're getting money. It was almost the exact opposite. You know, Nick Saban runs such a tight ship, and, you know, discipline and doing the right thing is so high. But also, you're the number one team in the country. Yeah. You're the best players in the country. You're under, like, the tightest microscope of what people are looking at trying to break you down.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was wild, man. Like, you know, I've been to a few Broncos games, been to State of Origin. I haven't been to many AFL games, but, yeah, it's just not the same.
No.
You know, you walk into Bryant Denny Stadium with 110,000, everyone is screaming, you know what I mean? Like, if I go to Suncorp, I can yell, and on the other side, I reckon I can hear something if they scream real loud. At Alabama, I couldn't scream as loud as I can and hear myself.
Yeah, right.
And we had to play and do all that sort of stuff, and it was just pure love. Like, you could feel from the fans, and, like, obviously the fan base is very, very traditional, and it's a way of life down there.
Yeah.
It's crazy, man. I couldn't, as a, you know, 20-something-year-old, you know, from 18 to 22-year-old, to be around such, tradition and what it means, like, how crazy people are. Like, man, people kill each other over a score of Alabama games, man. Like, people like, if you're from the state of Alabama, or you go from the area where the University of Alabama is not Auburn University and you disagree with any other people about Alabama, like, it's on from the jump. You know, if you come in and you're like, USC's better, like, you expect to get punched or someone's going to throw a beer can in your head. You know what I mean? Like, if you, there's traditions, man. If Sweet Home Alabama plays and people aren't dancing on the table, something's wrong. And it's just, I think it's so, like, I guess, raised into everyone. Where here, it's like, you know, people from, like, New South Wales have come up and they're like, oh, I'm a Broncos fan now because I live here and all that stuff. That happened in Alabama. Man, you better go ahead and move right back to where you come from. It's just much more serious. And obviously, recruiting is this multi-billion dollar business, you know what I mean? And it was tough, honestly.
What were you living off then? You know, we, like, you could...
We get free, we have cafeteria, everything. You know, we're sponsored by Nike, so we get the whole fit up, everything. You know, a lot of the rules around that is, you know, if one person gets it, everyone has to get it. So we all have got a bunch of good stuff, being you know, the number one school in the country. Obviously, you get a degree for free, which is a lot more than most professional organizations in Australia offer. And obviously, the Alumni Association is just super strong. They take care of you. There's so much more that goes into it, but it is a big part of tradition, and it's a big process, especially in football, of that lineage to be a part of, you know, great places and play for, you know, people would pay money to play the University of Alabama. You know what I mean? All I had to do was just show up because I was good.
But can you tell us, like, so you're getting fed, you're getting dressed. Like, you know, you could have had $200 in your bank account that whole season. Is that kind of how it is? I mean, you're definitely not making money.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, you can pretty much live for free. Like, we get, so you can either live on campus and you get like a small amount of money. And that was for like random things. Like, if you had like a phone or car or whatever. If you lived off campus, it was a bit more. Obviously, you had to pay rent and all that sort of stuff. But it was nothing. Man, I think, if I think back, now it's way more. It was like, for me, maybe like $500 a fortnight. And I was, and then, like, you know, it's crazy. I think back and I'm like, getting $500 a fortnight. I'm watching myself on ESPN. You know, I'm like looking at Sports Illustrated. I'm like doing all these media things, stuff like that. So it's pretty crazy. But, you know, it's going to change.
That is changing now.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping they back pay.
It sounds a lot better than life.
Man, like, everyone has to go through it, which was, it was good. It plays a big role in building the team off the field, I think, as well.
Yeah, it sounds a lot better than being in the young Broncos under Wayne back then, you know?
Yeah, I think there's a bit more that goes into it than I think what happens in Australia. Outside football, I think.
Well, there's more brown paper bags Saban. In Australia.
I think Coach Saban does a good job. He's one of the best that I've been around to play for, coach with, and just know on a personal level that, you know, really develops players more than, you know, sort of just running them in and running them out.
Now, you kind of went viral a few times. You kind of built a profile around your actual physical performances, not necessarily on the field. At one point, you got up to 157 kegs. Like, that's how much you weighed at peak fitness. And you were videoed benching 270. What?
It's almost double.
When did that transformation happen? Did that happen college? Did that happen at you know, Arizona or Alabama? Or were you constantly building that up? Or did that happen when you reached the NFL?
Yeah.
No, so it sort of started when I was 16. For my birthday, I asked my parents just to buy me a gym membership at Good Life. Actually, at Good Life Morningside back in the hood.
Junction Road.
Yes, sir. I started training there. I knew nothing, right? I used to buy bodybuilding magazines, and I used to drink, like, whey protein 38 times a day, and I was just, like, lifting weights. And one of the things I did was I looked up all the combine scores, and I looked up who was the strongest in college football. I looked up who's the strongest in the NFL. I looked up all the things they could do, and I made sure that those were the goals I was shooting for, right?
Yeah.
And for me, it was like run under 540. It was like bench over 550 pounds. It was like squat over 550. It was like clean over, like, you know, 140, 145. And I was like, all right, this is reasonable. So that's all I pushed towards. And then I think if you talk to anyone that has known me my whole life, they know I'm just like a weight room fiend. You know, I love lifting. I love training. I like pushing myself a lot to points where most people don't like to go. So I just constantly got stronger, and I was around a lot of guys in the US that were just sort of the same. Mm. And I started to get around dudes who were stronger, you know, and it goes back to that work ethic thing. I was like, okay, this is a challenge. They didn't say anything, but they're challenging me because they don't think I'm strong enough. So, I just kept getting stronger and stronger. And then I think my senior year is when I started really breaking all the records. That's when I benched 600 pounds, just 272. You know, I squatted like 675. I cleaned
how,
like 405.
How many reps could you do of 600 pounds? Just one big hula?
Under 600 pounds. Yeah. I don't think many people do reps of 600 pounds. So. No, sir, not me. But and then I ran like a, 479, 48, 40 in my pro day. So I was lucky enough to sort of have a little bit of natural ability, but also I had a work ethic out of hell.
Yeah.
Where'd that come from?
I just love lifting.
Torres Strait Islander and Murray background.
Yeah.
So was sport in the family? I mean, obviously American football wasn't. Where did the...
So both my parents played basketball and, my little brother played basketball when he was younger as well. And sports is just dominating.
They do play. They love basketball up north, don't they? Especially
I think they love it everywhere in Queensland, man. Yeah. Everywhere. But yeah, a lot.
Cairns tight pants.
everyone that trickles down obviously is playing basketball and don't need a lot of equipment, you know what I'm saying? For me, it was just like when I was younger, my mom was a school teacher and it was sort of like get straight A's or be really good at sports. I was like, man, let's do the sport thing, that sounds real good. So I just started playing. So I played everything, you know. I threw shot put. I did school. That was the only thing my mom didn't want me to play was rugby league.
Right.
I played a lot of basketball pretty much my whole life until football. And then I think the work ethic just stemmed from being around so many high performing people. And when I was younger and when I was going over there, we faced so much adversity to make it happen, as well as people doubting. Like I look back and laugh now, the people that said I would never do it or the people that say it was impossible, all those people, the same people get photos of me and stuff when they see me. And we had so much of that. And the whole time I went over there was not to prove anyone wrong. It was really just to prove my 15-year-old self and my family right, that the things we did was worth it. And I kept that real close to me the whole time. You know, I used to run extra, lift extra. I used to do stupid, stupid amounts of working out and training and pushing myself. And internally, that was just the price. That was the price for me. I wanted everything. I had to give up everything, and I was the first person to be willing to do that.
Do you see any other talent like that making its way through the Australian American football grassroots, or like that kind of inspiration? Because I imagine in my head the kids you were playing with in the park, you know, down in Redlands or even at Queensland level, or like they're the kids of American expats, or they're just kind of like hobbyists, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a very, very
obvious.
There's a particular man. When I first started playing, there's a very particular type of people that played gridiron in Australia. I wasn't always the most athletic.
Yeah,
but there was a few, man. Honestly, there's been a few guys I think you go over. It's not for everybody, man. That pathway, especially if you do the long grimy route that I did, it's not for everybody. Mm. People realize that real quick. Like it's more than hard work. Like I said, there's a price. Mm. And sometimes the price is everything. A lot of those guys, they get there and they think it's cool. Like, oh, I want to be suited up. I want to play in front of 110,000 people. I want to do that. But there's a whole bunch of other things that go into doing that. Yeah. And it's not usually fun.
Studies apart, like, what was your degree?
Human sciences. So, like, moving towards strength conditioning.
Yeah, right.
I actually got, well, it'd be like two. So I got associates in business from the first junior college. And then I did finish my 4-year degree in human sciences. And it's tough, man. Like I couldn't explain to people, like you would go from working out in the morning, working out, class all day, practice, go to study hall. And like in study hall, like you're watching your replays on ESPN, you know what I mean? And you're just like, you know, I'm like reading articles. Or like my tutors are like, oh, how was the game on the weekend? And I was like, dude, can you just teach me how to do this damn Pythagoras theorem right now? I really need this, you know? So it was real different, you know, and I think I was lucky. I'm not a huge attention guy, you know. Obviously, I stand out like a mofo, but I never really bought into the hype of a lot of the stuff, including myself. And I kept pretty grounded and pretty sheltered my whole, I guess, career. I do a really good job of not listening to people, and it paid off even throughout the study and stuff like that. I stay pretty focused on that. I I had a 3.8 GPA. I was like Dean's List, President's List, All-American Academic, you know, all that sort of stuff. So a lot of people don't really give a crap about that, you know what I mean? But from an Indigenous standpoint, yeah. coming from Brisbane, you know yeah. what I mean? Like, it means a lot.
You close the gap and then some.
Man, just to hold the standard, man. Like, yeah. I wanted everything and I wouldn't settle for anything less. And then my work ethic showed that.
And you did it all with face tats. You did it all with You did it all with face tats.
Man, I went to the White House 3 times with face tats. I don't know anyone else on. I mean, I shook Obama's real soft hands 3 times.
And you had YOLO tatted down your head.
Man, I did everything. You know, it's one thing. People always bring stuff up and they say how crazy it was. But I was real the whole time, man. I told the truth nonstop. I did nothing but the things I wanted to do and the things I worked for. And, you know, no one can ever really take that away from me. I think being so upfront with people, it sort of scares people that, you know, I just do what I feel, and a lot of things I wouldn't want to live my life any other way. You know, when I get old, I look back and all the work and all, you know, all the aspirations and, you know, all the doubt and all the awards and stuff sort of fade away. But, you know, when people talk about people that went to the U.S. for football, my yeah. name seems to be number one at the top most of the time. So it means a lot to me, you know, leading the way. I see a lot of these kids now, and you know, I'm still good friends with a lot of guys. You know, that Australian camp I played in, actually Jordan Berry was the kicker for that.
Right.
He's still in the NFL. And, you know, I'm pretty close with Adam Gottes. I trained with him a few times in Atlanta. Brad Wing, I haven't met him personally, but he was obviously over there at the time. And, you know, we were part of that crew. I chopped the leaves. I chopped the trees down to create the path that a lot of these yeah. kids are walking on.
Yep.
And it means a lot to me, man, because it's an amazing opportunity for these kids. I would send every single one if I could. I just think it's too much of a blessing not go over. I went over, like, from having nothing to, you know, having 2 degrees and being able to do all the things. And I traveled the world. I've been to the White House. I've met everybody. I had dinner with Pharrell. I've done all these crazy things, man.
Yeah.
And I'm just, you know, I'm just this young Indigenous kid from Morningside.
So you got 2 degrees. You got to meet all those people. Can you tell us a little bit about how it felt to finally make money out of all this shit? Like, yeah. what happened there? You went into a draft. Few people use this word, but it's almost like slavery, the college football system, where you're kind of, you know,
very close
to it. And then all of a sudden now it's the time. You've managed to go through all this. You've gone through Arizona, you've gone through Alabama without getting injured, and you're at the point now where it's time to actually go pro.
Man, it's pretty wild. I actually did get injured. I had a few surgeries when I was at Alabama. Right. I just came back really quick.
Yeah,
I enjoyed a lot of the process of getting ready, a lot of the training stuff, getting ready to go professional. It was, you know, even from a young, I guess, journey point, not at one point was I thinking, I need to go make this money.
Yeah.
That never really popped into my head at yeah. any point. Even when I was going through Alabama, I was just like, man, whatever. Like, I'm just trying to, every day I get to wake up, I'm like, this is a blessing. Let me just go do this work.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the draft was coming along. I was actually ranked really high. I was like top 3 D tackle in the country coming out of the draft. And then we play the SEC championship. I actually really hurt my knee.
Yeah, right.
I do a little bit of damage, my knee. Someone gets thrown into me from behind in the first quarter. I take the second quarter off. I come back and ball out in the third and fourth quarter. I go into the change rooms, take some tablets, get some shots. I'm like, let's ride. So I can't play third and fourth quarter. With no regard for my health or the future involved. So I was like, it's whatever. I signed up to commit to the University of Alabama. I mean, I'm pretty well known for this one game because of me coming back, and I had some pretty big plays to help us win that. And then we had 2 weeks to get ready for national championship. So all I did was rehab, train, get ready, played national championship, started, did everything. Obviously, we whooped Notre Dame in Miami. And then, the downside of playing at Alabama is we get a really short offseason because we just play every national championship, and that's the last game. So we have the shortest amount of offseason. So I had 4 weeks to get ready for the NFL draft, and I was like, for the combine. I was like, this is no good. So a week later, after the national championship, I had to have surgery on my knee. Have surgery, clean everything up, get everything ready, start rehabbing right away. So I can't do anything with the combine, just the mental side of things, benched, and then just stopped. Did the mental stuff, did all the testing, which is like excruciating, 3 days of like hardly any sleep, barely any food. Like,
wait, they actually do mental testing, like the SAS?
Well, they do the Wonder Leg, which is like a bit of a stitch up. It's like a modified like IQ type of thing. But so
yeah,
you have to meet specifically with each team, or the ones that are interested in you. So I met with a lot of people. I was ranked pretty high, and they pretty much put you on the board. So, you know, I met with, you know, Patriots, probably a memorable one, you know, and Belichick and the D-line coach would just put you on the board, and they'll say, you know, draw up a, you know, a too tight offense, you know, QB and shotgun spread. We're running a 3-4 defense. X, Y, and Z is happening. Like, where's the nickel? What would the defensive end have? Like, how would the three tech read that? All this sort of stuff.
Yeah, wow.
And you've got to map it out on the whiteboard.
Yeah, that was an upside of playing Alabama. I know football now.
Yeah.
So I knew a lot of those things that we had to do. And then a lot of the other ones is like general questions. Like, I remember going into speaking to Tom Coughlin from the Giants. And if you know Tom Coughlin, he's an older gentleman, clean cut. I guess conservative would be one of the words.
Yeah.
And I remember him sitting him down, and there was probably like 15 guys in the room. I'm sitting down, and I think I was wearing a tank top and some sweatpants. and he came up to me and sat down next to me, and he was like, tell me a little bit about yourself. And I sort of gave him a little spiel, and he was like looking at me real closely. He was like, so how many of these tattoos are gang related? I was like, gang related? I'm like, I'm from Australia, man. I'm like, nah, I'm like, these are like some traditional ones. This is just part of my life. And he just kept harping on gang related things. And I was like, this dude is like trying to pin me as like a gangbanger or something. I'm like, dude, I just graduated from college. Like, I don't gangbang. But it was real intense, man. Like, the meetings would go to like 3 a.m. They would make you real tired and like try and drum you into like saying some stupid stuff. And then they'll drug test you on the spot. And then like most of the time I was like, you're walking around half naked. Everyone's like, you know, it's like a big meat factory, you know what I mean? Like, dudes just like, they want to see, like, they were like, oh, do a full squat, or they'll be like, oh, you know, jump and touch the roof. Like, it's just stupid stuff. They just try and get in your head.
That was weird.
I mean, honestly, it was a blessing to be, you know, part of some of the top players in the country to get invited, but it's not something I choose to do once again. And then from there, yeah, I went into the draft, and, you know, my family wasn't over here. You know, my family came over a few times when I was in Alabama playing. I watched my first game and a few of my other ones my senior year, and then it was just me, man. I actually got the call when I was in the weight room at Alabama. I stayed in Alabama the whole time and trained to get ready. I knew that I didn't really care about money or where I got drafted or anything. I just knew that it was my job to control my controllables, and that was to be ready whenever I was called upon.
How was your knee at this point?
Yeah, it was good. It was fine, right? Yeah. So this is the downside. Like, I passed every physical. Everything was fine, and I was running. I did everything, did the pro day, did everything. That's when I ran my fastest. You can look it up on YouTube, man. I was moving. Yeah, then from there, draft day comes along. I'm, you know, my agent's like, yeah, obviously have projections going the first round, second round, third round, whatever. Obviously end up falling to 137, the fifth round. I was like, that's whatever, man. It's no big deal. Not really missing anything. You know, once I step in the door, we all starting from square one anyway.
Yeah.
So I just made sure I was ready, man. I worked out the whole time. They actually called me when I was working out. I took the call, spoke to John Snyder, spoke to Pete Carroll, spoke to Dan Quinn, who was a DC at the time. It was just like, yeah, I'm ready to go. And then kept working out. And then went and did my business. And that's how I've been the whole time, man. I did nothing. I'm just a hardworking dude. And that's what I showed when I was there. And
so what was it like going from like a university environment where the focus is really on you and your education to going into like the belly of a real big sports organization where your whole job is just to play football? You live and breathe it.
Seattle.
What was the transition
like? Honestly, this is a funny story, but it was way easier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, playing at Alabama, playing with Coach Saban, and the system and the discipline and the standard that is held at the University of Alabama is unrivaled. It's unparalleled to anywhere I've been. And I keep that very close to me to this day. I'm still very disciplined. And I'm blessed to have some of the lessons and learn firsthand from Coach Saban. When I actually got to Seattle, it was the exact opposite. You know, Coach Carroll is an amazing coach. You know, Dan Quinn, amazing coach. But the scene, the environment, the culture, it was black and white.
Mm.
So I get to the first team meeting, and like there was music playing. There was a basketball hoop. Like, dudes were shooting around, and like people were making a lot of noise. And I was just sitting there. I was like, my hands on my knees, like I was getting school photos. I was like,
Yeah.
I said, this is a trap. I said, they're trying to get me. They're going to try and trick me. I said, this ain't the NFL. Like, these dudes aren't taking this seriously. I said, this can't be real. And I was like that for a week. And then Coach Cal came up to me. He's like, why are you so uptight? I'm like, man, I'm like, this is just not what I'm used to and all that sort of stuff like that.
You ever been to Alabama?
Yeah, I was just like, do you know Coach Saban at all? Like, this is, like, I've never heard music in the whole building my whole time there. So I started to loosen up, and obviously it was a lot better. But, yeah, it was a lot different for me culture change-wise, because I was so used to, like, 10 minutes early is on time. Like, I'm saying to do extra every day. And, like, people look at me like, what is this guy? Like, this dude's like a robot or something. But, I honestly enjoyed it a lot. Obviously, having no school was a good part of that, being able to graduate and get that over and done with. But there is a lot of pressures that go along with that, you know, and it's costly, you know. You get a lot of money and you actually have to pay for a lot of things. And, like, you know, I'm paying this lady $200-some, you know, almost every second day to come stretch me out of my house before I go to practice.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm spending a lot of time pretty much just putting into my body and doing everything, from blood tests to people making my food. I'm like taking all these crazy, not really supplements, but I'm sort of, I'm getting tested so much. Everything has to be clean, and I'm getting this from this company and this from this company. And I'm like watching my weight and doing all these things. So it's nice to have that focus, but it's tough because it's a lot of work, man. It's unlike, I don't think any sports really in Australia are at that level. Mm-hmm. I speak to a lot.
Yeah.
About on and off the field stuff, and the standard of what I had to do was much higher.
Oh yeah.
And, but it was, you know, it was much, I guess much more development based. So I got better a lot quicker. I felt a lot better. And obviously, you know, a big part of playing the NFL is winning. So to be around that culture, in a different setting, in a different role, it was fun, man. I really enjoyed it. I was part of some of the best teams to play football, and the best part about being around those great teams is being around really good men. And like I said earlier, I'd rather be a good man than a great football player. And I was lucky enough to be around a lot of guys that did both really well. And I got to learn and associate myself with those guys. And it was a blessing, man. Like, not just the coaches, but the players as well. A lot of professionals, a lot of how to do things and a lot of how not to do things as well. But I enjoyed it a lot. Mainly the schooling was less time consuming, so I had a lot more free time.
Can you tell us a little bit, the NFL recently has been pretty, you know, harshly criticized for player welfare. As someone who kind of experienced, you know, injuries due to your job, and then, you know, of course you were diagnosed with cancer a bit later, how did you feel that you were kind of looked after? How do you feel like the institution responded to you, to your welfare?
Yeah, it was different. Like, once I had the first two knee injuries, which were like out of the blue accidents, had nothing to do with anything I was doing, just bad timing and just sport in general. Those weren't things I had any negative energy towards.
Yeah.
Seattle knew, you know, when I was healthy, I was balling, man.
Yeah.
I was playing really well every time I was practicing and moving around well. You know, any other person that would have hurt their knee once, they would have got cut right away. But they kept me there 3 years because every time I was healthy, I was at a level that was what they wanted.
Yeah.
But Seattle did a great job, man. Like, even through the knee injuries, the rehab, the training staff at Alabama, at Seattle were amazing. And then obviously to the end point of having cancer and sort of going through that whole process essentially with them, they did everything they possibly could. I don't have a bad thing to say about any of that. Obviously I'm a huge believer of, you know, like I said earlier, the price is what it is.
Yeah.
I signed up for all of that. Obviously, I didn't sign up for cancer, but, you know, I got a little extra punch on my ticket. You know, I was happy to ride that out. You know what I mean? People always ask me, you know, do I wish I would change things or would I have done what I was at the strong. Both times, all three times I got serious injuries, I was at my absolute peak.
Yeah.
You probably could hit me with a damn truck and I would be fine.
Yeah.
But it was just like the consequences of the situation that sort of put me in a bad position. I think I had a good pathway. I don't think everyone has that same pathway in the NFL.
Yeah.
It's very cutthroat. It's not for everybody. There's a lot of not politics, but there's a lot of things you have to do to be involved in certain things. But in the end, it's an extremely tight-knit brotherhood that everyone looks after each other. You know, still to this day, I'm very well connected throughout a lot, all the way up to the president of the Players Association. yeah. in Eric Winston in the NFL. But yeah, I don't have a bad thing to say about any of that compared to a lot of the other professional organizations that I've been around enough to work with.
Well, there seems to be two ways for Australians to get into the NFL, and that is to grind it out your way, like you and Colin Scott's, all those guys, you know, just grinding it out, going into college, working your way up, or you just wake up in the morning and you decide you want to go and play for San Francisco. How does it make you feel when, you know, having gone through all your entire journey and then you've got people who turn around and say they want to play in the NFL just off the bat?
From, you know.
Yeah, yeah, man.
After six seasons in the rugby league.
Yeah, it's real interesting, man. I'm not a huge fan of it. Like, I'm a huge fan of people following your dreams and that sort of stuff, but I do believe there is a process towards achieving some of them. To the guys that have gone over, like, it's been, I'm sure it's been an amazing experience for them, and I think that they sort of got a real quick adjustment to what the different standards are to the NFL compared to other organizations on and off the field. Like I said earlier, playing football, outside being a punter, don't get me wrong, you know, like guys like Nathan Chapman down a pro kick and stuff, sending dudes to a college, amazing, I love it, great opportunity. But dudes who just want to jump, skip the line, not a huge fan for two reasons. Obviously, it's super unrealistic. When I try and tell kids, I'm like, yo, go over, follow your dreams. I'm telling, follow me, go get a degree, meet people, you know, discover what you want to do in your life, and play football is the price. That's a great opportunity, but like trying to get these people, I get messages all the time, the amount of professional AFL players, professional rugby league players, rugby union now, that message me like, hey, do you know anywhere I can go over and do, I'm like, no, I don't know.
You can't code hop to NFL, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, if I did, I would have started a stupid business like all the other people trying to do it and take professional guys over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that I never would do that, but I'm not a huge fan of it. Yeah, just purely because it makes it unrealistic for a lot of people. It sends the wrong message.
Yeah.
As well as it really hurts Australians that are over there in the NFL. You know how many times, like me, Adam Gotsis, Jordan Berry, Brad, we were over there. I was there 3 years until Jared Hayne came over. I was actually more. I was in the NFL for a few years, and all these guys had to come over. And I was like, a lot of the guys that were there already Australian, like we were getting slammed by, you know, jokes, people talking crap the whole time about all these other Australians coming over. And I'm like, it's sort of like coming at a different angle here. You know what I mean? Like, he's making us sort of look bad, but we've been here. I'm a huge fan of dudes trying to follow their dreams and do that. But I just think that that pathway for the guys that have previously done it, you know, like Val and stuff like that, you know, there is a lick of opportunity there. Mm-hmm. Very, very small opportunity. And everyone's, you know, like, yeah, these guys are super athletes. I could go to Walmart and find guys that have played more football and are just as athletic. You know, the population is too much.
Yeah.
Right? So many people. I just think with guys with huge amounts of hype that want to push the hype over there and do stuff, at least, you know, take a path or take an avenue where I might be able to teach other people.
Yeah.
Besides chasing unrealistic dreams or pushing outside the bubble, like, no kid is going to be able to have enough money to go train IMG. It's impossible.
Yeah.
No Indigenous kids going over there.
Yeah.
But if you tell kids, you know, working hard and, you know, stick to their morals of the things they want to do and then take this process to get over there instead of just jumping all this other stuff, it'd be a lot better. But, you know, I've met a bunch of guys that have wanted to go over and do that sort of stuff. And the first thing I tell them is like, A, don't. And B, there's a lot more that goes into it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, the speed is a different speed. I was there. I played with some of the best coaches and players in whoever will play. And every day till my final day, I was still learning nonstop. Nonstop. And I was like, man, I'm still like, the whole time I felt like I was behind. I need to get better. And then I see these guys go over and then I watch their training film. I'm like, oh, Lord. I was like, maybe I feel like I took the right approach and I got the most out of it. I got a degree. I experienced everything. And I see a lot of these guys sort of, not just the ones that you see on the media, the ones that have tried and didn't get as far as those guys.
Jesse, just can you tell us? I mean, we obviously know Jared Hayne, but we're going to edit this out just to protect everyone's contracts. But can you tell us some of the names of the DMs you get?
Oh man, I couldn't tell you them. Like I just see the verified ones. I work closely with the NRL every now and again. I whenever I would go and speak at like different teams and stuff, I would get a lot of guys right after message me.
DM. Yeah.
I don't know a lot of the players. Like, yeah. Honestly, yeah.
They're 19 years old.
Yeah, I was like, who is this guy? They're verified. You know, they post. I can just tell by like their first few slides of their IG of like. You know, they're sponsored by a Mazda in their local area. They play for like some Sydney-based team or like, do something. But like, even when I was in the NFL, I didn't know who Jared Hayne was.
Yeah.
Like, I've been gone out of the country for like 5-6 years. Everyone started hitting me up and I was like, who are these guys? They were like rugby players. I was like, I've never seen these people in my life. You know, I used to get questions all the time. Like, what do you think of this guy? I was like, I don't even know who that is. You know what I mean?
He's from Parramatta.
Who's my state of origin, man? Like, I haven't been in the country in 7 years, so it's going to be tough. But, yeah, it's real different, man. Like, a lot of AFL players went over. A few was in when I was in Seattle, a few came and worked out in Seattle. And I could tell as soon as they rocked up, they had, like, kind of shorted. Because when they work out guys, they all wear the same stuff, right? And these AFL players, they must have rolled their shorts up because they were tall. They had short shorts on already. I was like, that dude has to be from Australia. I was like, his shorts are way too short. Yeah. There's no dude in the US wearing shorts like that. And then I saw him kick it, and I was like, yeah, that dude played in the NFL for sure. And yeah. He did. Yeah, I don't recommend it as a path for people to go over, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Now, lastly, Jesse, we're exhausted. I'm exhausted personally listening to that workload that you've kind of experienced over the last 12 years. 2 degrees, first Australian to win a Super Bowl ring. Was there any time for partying? In Alabama, Seattle, how was that? Just, you know, you can summarize with that.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of time, but there was a lot that got done.
Hell yeah.
You know, I was lucky enough to win 2 national championships. The first one was in Louisiana, New Orleans, which is, you know, a hotel was on Bourbon Street, so I was pretty wild. And then the second one was on South Beach in Miami, and I stayed the Fountain Blue in Miami. And it was pretty wild, and obviously we went to 2 Super Bowls as well. Won the first one, lost the second. So I've had a pretty wild time of, you know, I don't drink.
Yeah.
I didn't start drinking until 2 months ago, and it's only because I was like drinking whiskey like an old man. Till that day, I never drank alcohol my whole life, so I wasn't really, you know,
yeah,
in the position to get in trouble most of the time, which was good.
Not Dennis Rodman.
But yeah, it's a lot of crazy things. I try and tell people, like, the University of Alabama with, like, fraternities and sororities, man, it's like a movie. I couldn't believe it until I lived some of those situations off the field. And, I was just lucky enough I made it out unscathed. And I'm lucky enough to still be here today.
Good stuff. Thanks for joining us. You're in good health at this moment.
Yeah. I had a few health troubles last year.
Yeah.
Like I said, I just trying to refocus my energy back on, feeling better and doing things I want to do, not so much things that just to keep me busy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Wash your hands. Make sure you don't get coronavirus. It's the last thing you need.
Man, I'm trying to keep this 1.5 thing for the rest of my life. Yeah. I'm just going to call it personal space from now on.
Yeah, let's just do Zooms from now on. Thanks for joining us, Jesse.
Thanks.
No worries. Appreciate it.